Is he my prince? Is he the toad? Waiting, wondering, is getting too old. I'm gonna let down my hair, slide up my skirt. Get me out and be the biggest little flirt. Well, I might have.
Welcome to the Shame Free Zone with Veronica Monet, your friendly former sex worker and certified sexologist. The Shame-Free Zone is a safe place for your questions and your secrets about all things sexual.
Shame-Free Zone. This is Veronica Monet, your host, and we've got a kind of a controversial topic tonight. I've actually been getting quite a bit of feedback on Facebook this evening. I started the discussion about 2 hours ago in anticipation of my guest. His name is David J., and he is the founder of asexuality.org, which happens to be the world's largest online community of people who identify as asexual. He's been featured on news programs such as The View and 2020 and has led campaigns to have asexuality recognized and accepted. And, David, welcome to the Shame-Free Zone. I understand.
Thanks so much for having me. I'm excited to be here. I like being in Shame-Free Zone.
Very honored to have you here, and I understand you've got some very exciting news you're just busting at the seams to share with us.
Yes. Well, always exciting news, but we just found out that we've had this big, long campaign to try to change the way that the American Psychiatric Association talks about asexual people, the way that they categorize mental disorders for people that aren't interested in sex. And after this big campaign, we just found out that we won most of what we were fighting for in terms of getting, if an asexual person walks into a therapist's office, having kind of mental health institutions treat that asexual person with respect, not assume that they have a problem that needs to get cured.
Yes, and that's actually called the DSM, which is the Diagnostic Statistics Manual, which is what psychologists and therapists use as kind of their Bible to determine if somebody is mentally ill and requires treatment. And it's so it's actually pretty serious. It's not like, oh, you're depressed, but if you were, like, clinically depressed, or back in the 70s, they actually put homosexuality in the DSM, and people were sometimes institutionalized for being gay and lesbian, especially if they happened to be underage. So congratulations. So that is coming out of the current DSM, or that will be published in the forthcoming one?
In the forthcoming DSM, which is coming up, and our campaign, we sort of looked at what happened around homosexuality. We were talking to people that are doing similar work around trans issues in the DSM right now and trying to find ways to feed them information to kind of help their discussions take into account the way that we as communities talk about ourselves.
Okay, well, let's just dive right into this controversy here. I've got quite a few postings on here. One person was just being a smart ass. His name is Scott Summers, and he says, oh, I thought you meant ass sexual. Never mind. a much more serious comment from Bruce Abramson, who says, no. And here's the question that I posed. I said, is it easy to envision a person who has no desire for sex and never has? And Bruce Abramson says, no, the sex drive is natural. Lack of an appetite for sex is as dangerous a disease as a lack of appetite for food. And, David, go ahead, run with that.
Run with that? Okay. I would challenge that strongly. Well, first of all, I'll provide a little context, which is that I'm someone who's identified as asexual for my entire life, or at least as long as I could think to use the term. And I was in middle school, and all my friends were talking about having crushes on people and really come to terms with their sexuality. I had no internal frame of reference to understand what they were talking about. I just didn't experience sexual attraction. And it was scary. It was terrifying because we live in a culture that not only tells everyone that they're going to experience sexual attraction, but says that sex is an integral part of being human and an integral part of how everyone is happy. And that just wasn't true for me. I didn't feel that internally. And it took me years to really come to terms with that and decide that it was okay. And then to found a community where now about 40,000 other people from all over the world have come to talk about ourselves, to explore ourselves, to figure out how to kind of achieve intimacy on our own terms, and to really start an open, honest public dialogue about exactly some of the questions that, the kind of questions that, you were asking. Is it healthy for people to live without sex? We think it's healthy. We're happy. We don't see any problem in our lives. But it's a discussion that's worth having. And what I would, the statement I would counter with, the poster said that a human being without sex is like a human being, or without a desire for sex is like a human being without a desire for food. I would counter that and say that as humans, we intrinsically need intimacy. But that intimacy is much more complicated than sex. And much deeper. And I have a desire for human connection with people. And for me, that connection involves touch, that connection involves emotional closeness, that connection involves challenge. It involves a lot of the things that most people get through sex. I just get those things through other activities.
Okay. So, this is a hard one for a lot of people to wrap their mind around. Is asexuality a lifelong thing, or is this like a periodic thing? Like you go, you know, some people, you know, they feel like they're born gay or straight, and they pretty much think it's for life. Do you feel like you are always going to be asexual, or is it more of a where you're at kind of thing? It's just where I'm at right now. I don't really want to have sex right now.
So for most people in the asexual community, it's lifelong. Which is to say that I've been asexual so far for my entire life. Most of the asexual people I know have been gay for our entire lives so far. In the asexual community, unlike in the gay community, we really believe that identity is a tool and not a label. So I'm not going to say that I've been asexual for my entire life and therefore I know that I'm going to be asexual for the rest of my life. I would say that for my entire life, the word asexual has been a really useful way for me to understand who I am and for me to describe myself to other people. And if it continues to be that, then I'll keep using that word and I'll keep identifying as asexual for the rest of my life. But if I change next week randomly, if I wake up and suddenly I'm different, then I would want to accept that. And I wouldn't hold myself to a word just because it used to be useful.
Okay. And exploring this a little bit further then, if, let's say, you woke up tomorrow and ended up having sex with somebody, would you still call yourself asexual?
So if I wound up having sex with someone, it would probably depend on why I did that. It's actually not that uncommon for asexual people to have sex. Being asexual means that I don't experience sexual attraction. There are reasons that I could have sex with someone that have nothing to do with me being sexually attracted to them. I could have a relationship with them, and it could be part of how we express intimacy for one another. And even though it's not what I'm kind of internally compelled to do, it's something I do as part of a compromise with my partner, and it winds up working. Though I've never personally been in a relationship like that, that's fairly common within the asexual community. And while it's certainly complicated, it can work, and it doesn't mean that that person is any less asexual. We're not, it's very different than celibacy. Celibacy is a choice. You're celibate when you choose not to have sex, and you stop being celibate when you have sex. Asexuality is more of a description of what someone feels internally, and whether or not you have sex doesn't change your status as an asexual person, the same way that having sex with a man doesn't make you no longer a lesbian.
Okay. All right. So it's not necessarily a choice, like a celibate person is saying, I'm not going to have sex. But an asexual person may have sex, but it's not causing them to feel anything sexual.
Right. And when I said asexual people may have sex, it's still a lot less common than it is for what I would refer to as sexual people, because we don't really desire it intrinsically.
Okay.
But or we don't experience sexual attraction. We don't feel a desire to have sex as part of how we connect with people and our relationships with people.
You know, I'm sure that this is also something that you went round and round with the therapeutic community, and has this asexuality been attributed to childhood sexual trauma?
Not based on any kind of, there's no scientific research to indicate that that would be the case. And there's been a fair amount of scientific, or there's beginning to be a fair amount of scientific research. The biggest study that's taken place, kind of pulled from the largest question ever asked about human sexuality, which was in Great Britain, and found that about 1% of the population in Britain identifies as not experiencing sexual attraction. And they looked at that 1% and they looked for anything that correlates. They looked to see if those people had traumatic past experiences or had health issues or anything else, and they couldn't find any explanation. It looks like it's just like any other sexual orientation. It's just part of human sexual diversity.
So, okay, here's something that occurred to me. You know, the population of the planet has doubled since I was born. I was born in 1960. So in that time, the population of people on this planet has doubled. And it, you know, it's going to double much more quickly the next time.
Mm-hmm.
Do you think that this has any kind of evolutionary or adaptive qualities to it? Is it possible that we're seeing a rise in asexuality because the human species does not need to procreate?
No. Well, it's possible. I wouldn't put a lot of credence to that theory, in part because there's evidence that there have been people not interested in sex as long as there have been people. If you read historical accounts.
Yeah, go ahead. And tell me about that evidence, because I certainly never read about it. Or didn't know I was reading about it, perhaps.
So most cultures throughout history, many cultures throughout history, have made roles for people who didn't engage in sexual activity but focused on other kind of modes of connection and relationships within the community. People who focused on maintaining community relationships, people who focused on maintaining spiritual relationships but who weren't interested in sex, or who didn't engage in sexual activity. There's been evidence in most animals, just the same way that there's evidence of gay animals, there's evidence of animals that aren't interested in sexuality. And if you look back in literature and gay history, there's a lot that's been written about what were called Boston marriages around the turn of the century, which were women who moved in together and formed really close, emotional, affectionate relationships that wound up lasting their entire lives. And it's speculated that some of these women were sexual with one another, but also that many weren't, and had primary emotional connections that didn't involve sexuality that they were completely satisfied by.
I have actually heard about those Boston marriages. So, this is very interesting. What about, I don't know. Didn't we have a couple of presidents who never married?
Oh, I don't think so.
No?
I don't know. I'm not a U.S. history buff. Maybe someone can call in
and
drop some historical figures on us.
Well, here's what another listener has to say. Her name is Vivian Reed, and she says, people can be attracted to children, animals, inanimate objects, ghosts. There's no end of things that a person can be attracted to, including, I would assume, nothing at all. It's interesting that we seem more likely to believe someone who says they're attracted to a potted palm than someone who claims to be completely devoid of sexual desire. I would imagine that you probably agree with that people are kind of incredulous.
I'd say that, well, I think that the notion that there can be people who don't experience sexual attraction is difficult for some people to digest. I think some people have a worldview where they really can't imagine a human being existing without sexuality. But I also want to make an important distinction about that comment, which is that even though I, as an asexual person, don't experience sexual attraction, I still experience attraction. I still feel emotionally drawn to people. I still kind of feel the same emotional pull and complexity in my relationships that everyone else does. The act of sex just doesn't come into play there.
Interesting. Okay, so now let me ask you, has this created problems, you know, as far as dating? Like, you know, you maybe were attracted to somebody in intimacy way, but not sexually, and then they wanted it to be a sexual connection. And if it has, how would one navigate that?
Oh, it's created fantastic problems and fantastic opportunities. Relationships for me haven't been any more or less frustrating than for anyone else. But I think that I and many other asexual people have dealt with a different set of challenges.
Okay, so what are your sets of challenges?
The one kind of big way to frame that is that for most sexual people, relationships are complicated because you have to navigate a very complicated set of cultural norms and rules and expectations. Everyone has different expectations about how relationships will work. Not only you and your partners, but your family, society, you know, a lot of people are trying to impose their ideas of how relationships should work, and just communicating that and navigating that can be a really, really complicated process. For asexual people, we have the opposite problem. There's very few models for talking in our society, for talking about how really strong non-sexual intimacy gets built. And so as a community, we've been having to build those models from scratch. And that's a really exciting process because it's a blank slate. And there's a lot of exploration we get to do. But it can also be a frustrating process because there's a lot of times when we have to kind of figure out how relationships work. Let me give you an example of a problem and of an opportunity, which is that if I'm attracted to someone and we hit it off and we have a close connection, but they have a significant other, if I were a sexual person, then that would mean that I had to back off from the relationship because they were sexually involved with a significant other. Unless they were polyamorous, they probably also wouldn't want to be sexually involved with me, and so that wouldn't be a place where I could really form a close relationship.
Uh-huh.
But because I'm interested in being non-sexually intimate with people, I can say, oh, if they have a significant other, then that's just another person that I get to be non-sexually intimate with. And instead of forming a close non-sexual relationship with just one person, I can form a close non-sexual relationship with that person and their significant other and kind of triangulate in the relationship and develop a really close connection that way.
So what about touch? Do asexual people have a desire for touch?
Oh, most asexual people have a desire for touch. Not all asexual people. Like every other community out there, we're incredibly diverse. But most asexual people have a desire for touch that, whether it's just basic affectionate touch, whether it's close cuddling. Personally, I like kissing people and making out with people. But once touch becomes more sexualized, once it becomes genital, it just stops kind of making sense to my body.
Okay. So, is that a pretty common response for asexual people? You know, I know you just said that they're diverse, but, a lot of us are not aware of asexual people in our lives, so maybe you can kind of help us figure out the variety that one would encounter if we came to one of your meetings. I mean, would there be some people who liked oral sex but don't do intercourse, or is it nothing to do with genitals?
Probably not that far, just because people who like oral sex but not intercourse probably wouldn't find the word asexual to be a meaningful description.
Okay.
And so they probably wouldn't.
What about
they probably wouldn't. What about what?
Tantra.
Tantra? I don't know of any asexual people that really strongly identify with Tantra. I'd say the majority of asexual people that I've talked to this about would say that the emotional reaction that I have of sex to sex is somewhere between discomfort and boredom.
Okay.
And physically, they are somewhere between liking cuddling but not kissing, and liking kind of everything up to some form of intercourse, but not that. And there's some asexual people who even it's not as big a deal to them as it is to sexual people, but can even enjoy sex but don't experience sexual attraction.
Right, right. So they do it.
Yeah.
They might do it, but is that...
Or they might enjoy it but not do it because they, like, it's fun, but it's not something that they really feel a need to do, and they don't feel they need to go out of their way to do it.
Okay, and sometimes they might just have sex to please their partner?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Well, you know, Tantra is just about breathing your way to an orgasm. It has, you don't have to even take your clothes off.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know if you're aware of that. Maybe you haven't looked into Tantra, but it seems like it would be a lot less sexual than having sex when you didn't want to. But...
A little bit. I think that I haven't heard it talked about a lot in the asexual community, though there may be some people who experiment with it, in part because, to me as an asexual person, I see sexuality as a mechanism for people to interact and build relationships with one another, more than I see it as a fun thing to do or as a human drive.
Okay.
And so if I interact with sexuality, even though I am sex with people, I flirt with people in a sexual way, and that's because that helps me to build relationships with them.
And do you get like a charge out of flirting? You know, you may not.
Do I get a what?
You know, kind of like an energetic charge, like.
Oh yeah, totally. Because flirting is about so many things that aren't just sex.
Okay. And what about your genitals? Are they completely unengaged, or, you know, do asexual people get, you know, wet or?
So, like, most asexual people, experience sexual arousal. It's just not associated with a desire to have sex with a partner.
So, do most asexual people masturbate?
Yeah, the one study that's come out about it, which I don't know if it's published yet, came out of the University of British Columbia, found that asexual people masturbate about as much as sexual people do.
Oh, interesting. Okay. Now, see, for me as a sexologist, I consider masturbation to be sex.
Mm-hmm.
That gets
into terminology. So
it does,
if an asexual person considers the word asexual to be a useful way to describe ourselves,
right,
and to form a community and to talk about who we are, but that person also masturbates, is it invalid to use the term that makes sense?
Well, I would never say that anything's invalid. I think people need to self-describe. But I'm just saying that for me, my idea of sex is huge. Sexual intercourse is. I'm actually kind of frustrated with the culture because it's so focused on procreative sex, and I think that has an awful lot to do with our monotheistic religions, which really kind of push that down people's throats, you know, and reproduce. So, you know, when people's body, their vaginas and their penises stop working at a certain age, if they do, they don't have to, but for some people they do. Then they lament that they've lost their sex life, and I'm thinking that is like such a small portion of human sexuality. That's unfortunate. But,
yeah, which is interesting. So most asexual people, at least most of us that are really kind of centrally involved in the community, identify as sex positive and work closely with LGBT communities and queer communities, and share a lot of these same viewpoints. And it's funny because I've found that the things that you were saying about how you see sexuality as this very large and all-encompassing force, only a tiny bit of which is what most people in our society refer to as sex.
Right.
That viewpoint that sexuality is kind of all very, very widely dispersed is really, really close to the viewpoint that I have as an asexual person, which is that the barrier that our society draws between things that are sexual and things that are non-sexual is unnecessary. It isn't really based on anything. That whenever there's a sexual thing and a non-sexual thing, they're not really that different. Whether you're talking about a sexual activity and a non-sexual activity, or sexual desire and non-sexual desire, or sexual arousal and non-sexual arousal, or a sexual relationship and a non-sexual relationship, you can understand them on basically the same terms. There isn't anything special or magical about sex. It's great. It is magical, but in the way that everything else is magical.
You know, I think I'm starting to get this. And I think we are very, very close to agreeing with each other, you know, just using different terminology. Because when I talk about sex, people are always thinking about penis, vagina, or some kind of oral or something, you know, ejaculation. And I think, wow, I mean, like, to me, meditation flows into sex, and sex can flow into meditation. And it's a huge thing. It's just an energy. An energy that, mm-hmm. you know, but you could switch it around and just say, you know, that's chi and that's spirituality and that it's not sexual. It really doesn't matter. I mean, there is this life force that draws us mammals to each other on some level.
Mm-hmm.
we do want to be in each other's company and intimate with each other. How would you describe asexual intimacy? I would love to hear your explanation of that.
Oh, that's great, because that's where I was about to go. I was going to say that your description of what you describe as sexuality is very similar to what I and a good number of other people in the asexual community would describe as intimacy, which is a lot of what we talk about. A lot of the reason that I think we get such a negative reaction, people have such a hard time believing that asexuality exists, has to do with the fact that for a lot of people, sexuality, a limited definition of sexuality, and intimacy are connected at the hip. And they can't imagine those two things being separate. And so in the asexual community, there's been a lot of discussion about all the different ways that intimacy can look. And the different ways that we can bring it into our lives. And those that go into kind of roughly three, I talk about it in three categories, that as asexual people we can be oriented to. So there's partnered intimacy, which is, what most people think about when they talk about dating. So it's romantic, people meet, they fall in love. They get married. That's happened a couple of times within the asexual community, both among asexual people and between asexual people and sexual people. And then if the relationship works, then they can maintain it for a long time, and it's great. And that kind of partnered intimacy is what a lot of asexual people want, and it's something that we can achieve with only a little bit of tweaking of the kind of normal way that intimacy is thought about, right? Monogamy. What monogamy means has to change a little bit if there's no sex going on. How you distinguish a close romantic partner from a friend has to change a little bit if there's no sex going on. But for the most part, the relationships look really similar. There's also people... Sorry, go ahead.
Go ahead. Finish with that.
There's also people who form really intimate relationships that look more like best friendships. So they'll form really close relationships, they'll even move across the country to live together, but they won't feel romantic feelings for one another. They'll just fit together well. Like I know of an asexual pair that says, we're not a couple, we're a set. We're like two coffee mugs that go really, really well together.
I'm not a
and
couple,
just have,
a set.
Yeah.
I like that. That's cute. We're a set.
And the interesting thing about the asexual community is that for people who aren't in a pair of some, whether it's a romantic pair or an aromantic pair, the word single doesn't get used much in the community at all. If you don't happen to be in a partnered relationship, then there's a lot of other forms of intimacy that are valid. And we don't use the word single because that implies that if you're not in a partnered relationship with someone, you're somehow alone.
Okay, so, you know, I think this is really touching on a lot of things that I have never used this terminology, but I can see where it would be useful. For instance, you know, you think about the cause for divorce because there hasn't been any sexual intercourse. That,
mm-hmm.
that can become a valid reason to seek divorce. And if you, you know, call yourself an asexual and then you can get them to take it out of the diagnostic statistics manual so that it's not considered to be unhealthy that you're not interested in sexual intercourse, then you could conceivably have a marriage that was based on something besides sexual intercourse. And it's kind of interesting, really, when you think about it, that becomes like one of the big ways that you can qualify for a divorce back when people usually actually had to justify it.
Mm-hmm.
So,
and I think that notion is still around in our culture, that the emotional connection that people have just isn't as valid if there isn't sex going on.
Right. Exactly. Exactly. And so instead of allowing the two people who happen to be living under the same roof or not living under the same roof but having some kind of a connection with each other, letting them define what works for them, there are these expectations that there's certain things that have to happen or it's not valid.
Yeah. And in the asexual community, this is why I said that there are opportunities as well as challenges. It's actually pretty liberating to not have to deal with that rule. So when I'm in relationships, rather than looking at whether or not sex is a part of them to classify them, which isn't what I'm saying most people do, but I think that that's a factor in a culture, I'll look at three things. I'll look at how much time do I spend with that person? What do I feel for them, and how much do we communicate those feelings? And then what kind of commitments have we made to one another? And if I have a relationship where I see someone twice a week and we say that we love one another and we're really, really expressive, and when I'm around them I feel really strong feelings and they feel the same way, and we make, you know, we're talking about where our relationship's going to be in the next 3 years, then that's a really, really close relationship. And that's different than someone that I see once a month and not emotional with in the same way. And so the idea that if I'm having sex with someone, then suddenly that relationship takes on this whole special status doesn't make sense.
So it's much more focused on the interaction as opposed to the genitals. I really like that. I think that's a much more valid focus for any kind of human connection. Here's a question, though. Now, a lot of times when people who consider themselves sexual are dating, there is like this little bit of tension and excitement that comes from, you know, when are we going to and are we going to? And I'm wondering what, if you have an asexual connection with someone, I would imagine it, you must also feel excitement or, and I'm wondering what it would be about. So, you know, for those of us who haven't experienced this, it seems like, well, the excitement is that we might have sex.
You can basically substitute anything else that's exciting and that makes you feel a little bit vulnerable for sex in that situation. So maybe...
Don't leave us hanging out there because, you know, we're all not... this is a new idea, so give us some specifics.
Yeah. Yeah. So what I've found when I'm really developing, and it's to, so there's a... Some other types of intimacy outside of partnered intimacy that I want to talk about too. We've kind of gone into partnered intimacy. But for me, when I form relationships with people, I've found that the relationships that have the most potential to really go somewhere, rather than being that maybe traditional model, which is if there's sexual tension or sexual attraction there, then that relationship has the potential to go somewhere. For me, I would say that if there is the potential that I can kind of get under someone's armor, I can contribute something to their life that otherwise wouldn't be in their life, that's going to be really empowering for them. And they can contribute something to my life that otherwise wouldn't be in my life, that's going to be really empowering for me, then the relationship has the potential to go somewhere. So the tension, I'm trying to think of a specific example. I have a friend who is... really wants to kind of take a leadership role in her community, but is scared to do that. She's a brilliant organizer. She knows how to put together events, but she's uncomfortable sort of getting up in front of people and uncomfortable about what role she wants to take in that community. And so I formed a relationship with her that was all about me kind of mentoring her and giving her support And the tension was around how much is she going to let me in? And how much are the two of us together going to be able to make something really cool happen in our community? And that's what we got excited about. And that's what we got
to build up about.
The rest
of us look really superficial, you know that, David?
You're making us look really superficial. No, I mean, sex is great. Sex is fantastic. I'm not down on sex at all. And also, everyone else already does this, right? Like, if I was a sexual person in that situation with that person that I just talked about, there's a good chance that we'd do all that great stuff around the community and maybe make sex a part of our relationship as a result, right? That would be a part of how we express intimacy, the intimacy that we'd built. And sexual tension and sexual flirting isn't just about bodies and eye contact. It's also about this stuff. It's also about people adding something new and interesting to one another's lives. So don't think it's that different.
No, except for the fact that you're trying to save the world. No, I'm just kidding.
That's my own disorder.
Okay, so what about this? Sometimes when people don't have sex, they can get kind of uptight and stressed. Does that happen to people who are asexual, or do they not have that kind of stress?
That happens to people who are asexual or trying to fake being sexual. Anytime you try to be something you're not, anytime you try to suppress a part of yourself or fake a part of yourself, you're going to wind up stressed. And
okay.
You're going to wind up frustrated.
Okay.
I've gone through periods in my life where I felt like I had to pretend to be more sexual than I was, and I was stressed and frustrated.
Right.
And I could imagine that if someone was feeling sexual things and was trying to pretend they didn't, then they would feel stressed and frustrated too.
Okay, all right. So the answer is that no, you feel stressed when that really does kind of shed a light on why those of us who feel sexual would be feeling stressed, because we're trying to fight with
right.
who and what we are. That's very...
Mm-hmm.
So I'm just fascinated in how you approached the therapeutic community on this. What were some of the major obstacles, or were they just ready for it and said, okay, yeah, that's great. What was it like getting this recent win?
Getting this winner on the DSM? Well,
yes.
they were much, much more receptive because of the fantastic legwork that the gay community did. Mostly the gay, lesbian, bi, trans, but mostly, and a lot of the trans community actually kind of was instrumental in winning a victory for the gay rights movement. But because of all that groundwork, we were in a much, much better position. And we researched transgender people and intersex people, both of whom have had real struggles with the mental health community and with medical establishments. And found that when those communities were just kind of emerging and coming on the scene, the people who did research on them didn't really take into account what the community said about themselves. Researchers would just kind of do some study and come up with their own harebrained theory of how what it meant to be trans or what it meant to be intersex, and then write it in a paper. And once it was written in a paper and they thought they understood it, it was really hard for the community to change that and go and tell the medical establishment, you know what, we don't have PhDs, but actually what's written in these academic journals is not the way that things go. And so as asexual people, what we did was as soon as we emerged and the first research about asexuality started coming out, we actively reached out to anyone who was doing the study. And we said, we don't want to influence the results of your study because that would not be scientific. We will help you. We'll let you interview us. We'll give you any resources that would be helpful to you to do your research. And we want a chance to at least explain to you how we describe ourselves so you can take that into account in the way that you talk about the community. And that was very successful, both in ensuring that research that came out was at least respectful of how we talked about ourselves,
right,
and in building kind of professional relationships with the people who are researching us such that when we had questions or we had issues, like around the DSM, we had people we could reach out to. And what wound up happening was the person, two of the people who were selected to be on the committee to review hyperactive sexual desire disorder, this component in the DSM, were some of those researchers that we developed relationships with.
You know what?
So,
since you're talking about aligning yourself with gay, lesbian, and bi and transgender, this might be actually a very good time to ask. I'm over on your website right now. You've got great questions here in the FAQ, which I'll post on Facebook. But one of the statements is, I identify as straight, gay, bi, something else, but I still fit your definition of asexuality. Am I wrong?
It's actually fairly common to have an asexual person who also identifies as gay, straight, bi, or lesbian.
For our listeners who aren't part of that community, maybe you can explain to them what the difference is between gender identity and sexual orientation.
Between sexual orientation and gendered attraction, or between
sexual
orientation?
Gender identity, where you feel that you're straight, gay, bi, transgender, it doesn't have to translate to sex. It can.
Right.
It is more about how you feel in the world. So, and I think a lot of people get confused around that. You could be lesbian and very much identified with the lesbian culture. And, for instance, you might feel, that growing up you hated dolls. And I'm just going to pick one out that's kind of stereotypical. But that doesn't necessarily mean that you actually want to perform cunnilingus.
And you can also be emotionally, romantically a woman who's emotionally, romantically attracted to other women, but doesn't have a desire to have sex with anybody.
Be
an asexual lesbian.
Right. Yeah. And people who are identified as gay and lesbian also sometimes have sex with people of the opposite sex, too. So that's an area that, a lot of people don't comprehend, because they pretty much think if I'm straight, I have sex with the opposite sex. If I'm gay, I have sex with the same gender. It's, not necessarily true.
Yeah. And it's much more complicated than who you have sex with.
Well, it totally is. And that's why we have two different words for them, gender, gender identity and sexual orientation, which I, just trying to make sure we put that out there. What about this? I think asexuality is inherently queer. Queer.
So a lot of
gay or lesbian or bisexual. I'm pulling these off of your website, David.
Yeah. So a lot of asexual people, myself included, identify as queer, and I would say I would take it beyond the way that I use the term, beyond what you just said. Of queer is a political term to me, which means, as a queer person, I challenge the idea that what is quote-unquote sexually normal is better than what is quote-unquote sexually abnormal. And I feel sort of strongly that I'm a part of a larger movement that's trying to challenge heteronormativity, trying to challenge the idea that a normal view of that quote-unquote normal sexuality is what people should conform to. But not all sexual people agree with that political belief or use that term to describe ourselves. But I do, and it's fairly common for asexual people, too.
Well, yeah, and I think queer identity has a lot to do with bucking the prevailing gender norms. You can definitely be wanting to have a woman for president, or wanting little boys to be able to wear pink tutus. You could have that freedom that, somebody can say, I don't want to continue to have this male or female body. So all of that, I think, comes along the lines of gender role expectations, gender identity. And it really has nothing to do with who you're having sex with or if you're having sex at all.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And there's interesting overlaps around asexuality and gender, and that one of some of the really big gendered expectations in our culture have to do with sexual desire and what kind of sexual desire people experience and how they express that sexual desire or reciprocate that sexual desire in others. And a lot of asexual people, we construct and perform genders that challenge those norms.
Well, here's a question from your website. It says, I've only really been attracted to about 3 people my entire life, but when I wanted to have sex with them. Would I be sexual or asexual?
So the answer, categorically, anytime anyone asks me that question, am I sexual or asexual, I'll say to them, I can't tell you. I can't tell you if you're asexual or not. The word asexual is a tool that we use to figure ourselves out as a community. The asexual community uses it to figure ourselves out. If that word makes sense to you, if the word asexual kind of resonates with you internally, then use it. Play around with it. See if it fits. If it doesn't make sense, then don't use it. If you use it and then next week you realize that it doesn't make sense anymore, then great. Hopefully it was helpful to you.
Right.
The fact that someone decides to use the word asexual doesn't mean that it's stuck to them like a sticker forever. But that's the first answer to that question. The second answer to that question is, I've been attracted to people a few times, is it's all a continuum. It's all a continuum. And so there are plenty of asexual people who may experience sexual attraction a little bit. There's also a whole segment of the community that identifies as gray A, which in the gray area between asexual and sexual.
It's kind of like bisexuality. You know?
Exactly, yeah.
Of which I am. And, you know, people sometimes have assumptions, oh, that means you like men and women equally. And it's like, not even in the same lifetime. What year is it? Let's see, my sexuality comes in phases. Speaking of which, sometimes I'm sexual, other times I'm completely asexual. Do I have a place in your asexual community?
Yes. The asexual community includes people that actively identify as sexual, who are allies and who just find the things that we're talking about interesting and want to be our friends. So we're a space for mostly people who identify as asexual, but anyone who wants to come and talk about their sexuality and figure themselves out, or talk about anything else. And we're a place to build an open, honest, public dialogue about sexuality. So if there are some people who go back and forth, who will go through sexual periods and then go through non-sexual periods. And if people find the concepts that we're talking about in the asexual community useful to do that, then by all means, they're welcome to join the community and use this as a resource.
Which is another question on your website. Why have an asexual community?
So there's really two reasons. I was kind of telling the story of when I was in middle school, when I was really just coming to terms with this. I was like maybe the first 2,000 or 3,000 asexual people in the community, in that no one told me that it was okay to be asexual. I had to make up the word myself and type it into Google, and then I didn't find anything, so I made this website where other people then, who independently kind of struggled with their asexuality for years, invented the term asexual, and then typed it into Google, found the website. And that was for a couple of years, that was the only way that an asexual community could come together, with all of these people going through a really kind of arduous internal process to invent, and we all happened to invent the same word, and then we all happened to find one another on the internet. And maybe the first 2,000 or 3,000 of us. And the reason that that community was necessary is because as an asexual kid, I looked around and everyone on TV and in movies and in music who was falling in love was using sex to do it.
Right.
And sexuality was in how yogurt was sold. It was something that all of my friends were talking about. It's a major part of their lives. There was this all-encompassing sense that sex was just part of what everyone did. If living without sex was like living without money. You just needed it to have a complete life. And it was really scary for me to face the possibility that I might have a life without it, because, not because I wanted to have sex intrinsically, but because I didn't know what that meant. And I wanted a place where I could figure out what that meant, and also where I could figure out who I was and figure out how to connect with other people on my own terms. Sexual people have to talk to other sexual people to understand their sexuality, right? You spend a lot of time with your friends processing, and there's a whole world of resources in the straight community and in the LGBT community for people to understand who they are and understand their sexuality. And asexual people need the same thing.
Well, you know, I think it's very interesting. I found something else on here that I worth reading. It says, and I thought this was really kind of funny, are asexual people more sensible, clever, etc. than sexual people? And the answer was, asexuals are just as diverse as sexual people. Some of us may be sensible and intellectual. Some of us are less so. You may not have noticed this, but the same is true of sexual people. The myth is that asexual superiority comes from freedom from the distraction of attraction, sex drive, and sexuality. But sexual people are capable of thinking of other things, too. Also, some of the greatest pieces of art, music, and literature were motivated and inspired by sexual fantasy or activity. Asexuals are not better or worse than sexual people. We're just different.
Mm-hmm.
Has that been a difficult thing to get across? It seems like in our society where something always has to be better or worse.
I hope that's not too difficult to get across. I think that especially maybe this gets to, if we're talking about American society, to some puritanical cultural roots, but there's a need to make value judgments when it comes to sexuality a lot of the time. Mm-hmm. And just as a community, in part because we came out of, you know, the people who founded the asexual community were people who'd been really actively involved in queer communities for a long time, and we just didn't, we saw any kind of value statements like that as really toxic.
Okay. And you know what, that really begs this other question, why do asexuals want or need to come out anyway? What is coming out about?
Well, if I don't come out, then there's an expectation that I'm sexual. The same way that if a gay person doesn't come out, there's an expectation that he's straight.
Right.
And so there's two reasons for me to come out. First of all, I want people to understand where I'm at. I don't want people, if I'm not having sex with anyone, I don't want everyone to assume that that's because I'm trying and failing. I want people to know that that's because that's not what is a priority in my life.
Right.
And because it's really important for me and for a lot of asexual people to be visible. Visibility gets talked about a lot in the asexual community because invisibility is something that we face pretty harshly as a community. When I talk about asexuality in a room full of people, maybe half the room at this point has never heard of it. And there's a real need, and that's bad if there's an asexual person who's just it's easier for them if the society around them understands what asexuality is. And so we're really trying to do public education and create open, honest public dialogue about the fact that asexuality exists so that life can be a little bit easier for asexual people as they come out.
Well, I have to tell you, David, when I contacted you, your website wasn't up, and so I didn't get a chance to read a lot of these things, and I'm really impressed. I mean, it's just a really healthy, balanced approach.
Well, thank you.
Well, you know, and I've got a few years in the bisexual activism, so very, you know, resonant with that queer model of as being sex positive, which I wasn't expecting asexuality to be sex positive.
Oh, yeah. Totally.
So, we've only got, we've got about another 10 minutes, actually. So, I thought maybe you might like to tell people a little bit about your website. I'm going to post it up here on Facebook right now. But
okay.
Maybe also about the meetings or how they can contact you or why they'd want to.
Okay. And if there's time, I'll wrap up one of the points that I was making earlier, too.
Okay.
So the website is asexuality.org. It's a grassroots organization that's completely volunteer-run called the Asexual Visibility and Education Network, or AVEN. And it consists of a bunch of information about asexuality, including links to a whole world of asexual blogs. If you found this discussion today interesting, I recommend going on to some of the asexual blogs and reading, because there's people talking about this stuff, really smart people talking about this stuff all over the place. And it also, there's a little piece of cake up in the corner that says Enter Community. If you click there, there's a really active forum of asexual people with a chat room talking about everything from asexual identity to asexual relationships to the random funny cat pictures they just found on the internet. And that's, if you're listening to this and you're asexual, that's a great place to go for support. If you're curious about this community and you want to learn more, it's a great place to go to understand what we're talking about and what this is all about.
Okay. And who might want to visit besides, you know, healthcare practitioners or whatever? What kind of people would want to visit?
So we welcome anyone. We ask that when you come to the community, be respectful. But otherwise, there's a lot of people who identify as sexual who are active members of the community. The community is really set up to be a supportive, safe space for asexual people to come to understand ourselves. So if you're listening to this and anything that I've said about asexuality resonates with you or seems like it might be useful to help you figure yourself out, then I recommend going to the community to talk about that with people.
Yeah, absolutely. And I mean, whatever is going on with your sexuality, I mean, and I know a lot of people, probably at this point, I don't know so much if coming out as bisexual is as charged as it was when I was coming out bisexual in the 90s. I can remember getting a speech from some guy I'd been dating. He says, I heard something that I'm sure it's not true. Please tell me. And I was like, no, it's true. And he goes, oh, well, I'm just really shocked. He never spoke to me again.
Oh, no.
Which, frankly, you know, it's kind of hard to imagine a straight guy that doesn't talk to a bisexual girl nowadays. But at the time, it was pretty traumatic.
Huh.
And that's, you know, and we were, of course, struggling to get the word bisexual put into things like the gay pride parade, so.
Yeah.
And so totally, I understand invisibility. It's like a death sentence. There's, you know, on some level, it basically says you do not exist, and if you do, there's something shameful about it.
Yeah, and we just marched in our first pride parade this past summer in Vancouver and San Francisco. And Berlin. So we're getting there.
Congratulations.
Yeah.
Congratulations. Here's a little bit of controversy towards the end of our show here.
Mm-hmm.
I don't like being asexual. I want to be normal like everyone else. What can I do?
Well, I would Is this from our FAQ? I would say
yes,
that
it is.
First of all, that's legitimate to feel that way, but it's worth asking what is so great about being normal for the sake of being normal.
Right.
If someone genuinely has really thought about it and doesn't want to be asexual, then there are maybe a range of therapies out there that can get tried. They're not always successful, but sometimes they are, that can make people like sex more. It depends on why someone doesn't like sex in the first place. And for most asexual people, it's close to whatever mechanism creates sexual orientation, and so it's very hard to change. But I think that the important thing that in terms of sexual health and asexual health that I want people to realize is that if there's someone who doesn't like sex and is distressed about that and sees it as a problem, then I would want that person to know that they can either become happy by learning to like sex, or they can become happy by learning to connect with people in the way that they want to, not liking sex. Well, and that as they explore themselves, they should be aware that both are kind of places that you can wind up in that can lead to a happy life.
Well said. And frankly, that applies to people that consider themselves sexual. Because, you know, a lot of people who are sexual put all their eggs in the sexual basket, you know, and they don't develop their skills at intimacy. As a matter of fact, a lot of times people run from intimacy and run towards the sex instead, and then, you know, mislabel that as intimacy. It can be a doorway to intimacy, but you can also have sex with no intimacy whatsoever. So I think that's good advice for anybody, regardless of how they're identified, which is, you know, to really connect with your need for connection.
Yeah.
And, you know, and if that happens to, you know, certainly our need for connection eclipses our need for sex, because we have the need for connection to a lot of people that we are not going to be having sexual relationships with, even if we consider ourselves sexual.
And I think that's the most interesting and also the kind of most rewarding challenge I have as an asexual person, is that rather than thinking about one intimate connection with one person, I'm really forced to think about all of my intimate connections with everyone. And I have to think not just in terms of my relationship with a partner, but in terms of my relationship with my whole community, if I want to talk about intimacy and how it fits into my life. And that's harder because there's more to keep track of, but at the same time, I think it's thinking about community and thinking about community as a source of intimacy is something that I wish our culture did more.
Absolutely. You know, in some ways, I feel like it reminds me just a tinge, not, you know, but a little bit of my experience with the polyamorous community. Because in that community, I mean, a lot of people are like, oh, that's group sex or orgies. And it's like, no, there's so many people that have long-term partnerships, and the sex stopped years ago, but they're still sharing child care or housing or, you know, insurance or medical or just the joys and sorrows of life, and that there's these real authentic connections that are taking place that have nothing to do with a sexual connection, which is really lost upon the monogamous world.
Yeah. Which, I mean, personally, when I was looking for a way to understand how I connect with people, I lifted half of my ideas from polyamory and the other half from community organizing and kind of wound up with something in between. Where it's like polyamory, but instead of having sex, you find things that, you know, things that people are passionate about, music, politics, you know, self-expression, whatever, and you build relationships about that.
Well, you know, I got to tell you, David, one of my favorite jokes is that I like to say that I would love for the polyamorous people to teach the monogamous people how to be truly intimate. And it would seem that this asexual movement could also shed a lot of light on the idea of how to build, you know, community and intimacy, so that we are not just focused on what goes on between our legs. I've been astounded at how many people think that an uncommon arrangement is somehow or another sacrosanct, you know? And it's like, oh, no, you can't. How do you know that you love each other? Well, that's really sad that you even have to ask that.
Yeah.
Well, I only know that I love somebody if my genitals are doing something.
And at the same time, even if we're not focusing exclusively on what goes on with people's genitals, still take the time to celebrate it. As an asexual person, I firmly believe that our society needs to talk honestly about sex more and honestly celebrate sex more. And honestly doing that means acknowledging and celebrating the fact that even for sexual people, it's sometimes boring, and that's okay.
Oh, my God. You're starting a really liberating revolution for all of us here. And yes, it is sometimes. Depends, you know? But there is definitely an expectation that people must be sexual or there's something wrong with them. And I got to say, I'm just really this, I could tell you this, when I was getting my certification as a sex educator and a sexologist,
mm-hmm.
we never talked about asexuality.
Oh, well,
yeah.
We've only been on the scene for a couple of years, so, and we're just getting into the sex education mechanisms that are trained sexologists, so we're working on it.
I think it's totally exciting. I really do.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's very exciting. It opens up a whole new page. And at first blush, that's not what it sounds like. It sounds like, that must be some form of celibacy. And I really appreciate the distinctions that you've made for us tonight.
Yeah, I'm actually excited because I'm about to go give a talk at Princeton, and the abstinence-only group on campus is going to protest me, which is the first time I've ever gotten to, like, face off asexual versus abstinence only, and it's going to be great.
Well, I hope that you'll post that up on your website so we can all follow along. And I just want to congratulate you on anybody who can shift the DSM. You know, that's a lot of power right there. So we got one final comment here from a listener. Her
mm-hmm.
name is Terry Breyer. She says, I'd say there is room for that on the spectrum. You never know what karma other souls have embodied with. So she has a very, very philosophical, accepting attitude, which I thought was kind of a lovely way to end tonight.
Well, thank you so much for having me on.
David, thank you. Thanks for all the work that you're doing for sex positivism. Very enlightening hour. And maybe we'll have you back on when, we make your next big accomplishment, which I have a feeling won't be that long.
Well, thanks a lot.
Okay, good night.
Good night. Take care.
Thank you for tuning in tonight. If you liked what you heard and you want more solutions for your love life, please call me toll-free at 888-903-0050. Once again, that number is 888-903-0050. I am the only person who answers that line, and I am usually available Monday through Friday from 10 a.m. to 10 p.m. Pacific Time. You can also visit sexwithoutshame.com to discover more of what I can do for you. And remember, your secret is safe with me.
Yeah.